Good morning. I'd like to call to order today's meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Education, for Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm also going to open again the public hearing on Senate Bill 5516 and Senate Bill 5517. We have carried those over so that we can finish up the end of the multi-hundred page presentation of ODE. But, you know, big agency, important responsibility. I know we're all very glad that we have had the opportunity to take this much time and really go thoroughly through it. So I would like to call up Rick Pegler, I believe.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, there's one person left to testify.
That's right. One more testifier
from last week that had signed up we did not get to.
Okay. Let's go ahead and have her come forward, please. And just go ahead and identify yourself for the record, and we'll start the timer.
Thank you. co-chairs Smith Warner, Monroe, members of the committee and committee administrators, thank you so much for having me here. My name is Soren Metzger, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon School Employees Association. We represent Head Start workers in the Clackamas County Children's Commission, Mount Hood Community College Head Start, Neighborhood Impact, and Lane County Head Start. And I'd like to speak to you today on behalf of, in support of the direction of House Bill 5516. I also appreciate having the last word. I know. Okay, sorry. I'll stay on track. So again, thank you so much allowing me this opportunity to testify in support of the direction of House Bill 5516, especially as it relates to the allocations for the Oregon pre-kindergarten and the EIS ECSC programs. I also submitted written testimony with a little bit more detail. I understand that we don't have much time and my timer is going. So you are welcome to look at that testimony. It's it's dated for last week. That being said, we appreciate the governor's proposed investment of the 2.7% over current service levels in early childhood education, the $8 million investment in professional development, and the assistance in the increased cost of the background checks required for child care providers. But co-chairs Smith Warner and Senator Monroe and members of the committee, this budget is a step in the right direction. However, OSEA does not feel that this is enough to address the current wait list of eligible children and families wanting to access the proven successful Head Start program. According to some information that was recently made available to me by the Oregon Head Starts Association, there are about 12,266 children enrolled in the Oregon pre-kindergarten programs, which means that there's only about 60% of the eligible population actually receiving services. So there's over 1,700 students and families actually on the wait list to receive Head Start programs. And so OSEA supports funding levels sufficient to ensure that all eligible children may participate in Oregon pre-kindergarten Head Start programs. And we have complete faith that this legislative body will find a way to do that. So I'm going to leave it there, and thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad you were able to come back and testify. And I'm sure we will take a look at your written testimony. Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Do you know what the additional cost would be if we were to serve that other 40%?
Co-Chair Monroe, I do not have that information. I'm happy to follow up with the Oregon Head Starts Association and get that information to you if you're interested.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we finished public testimony, and I will call back up Rick Krager from ODE and Lisa Pearson from DAS. To finish, I believe we need to go through our KPMs.
Yep.
Your proposed KPM changes at the end of the proposal.
And Madam Chair, we're on page 292.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe. For the record, Rick Krager, Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Administration with the Department of Education. Nice to see all of you once again. And as you mentioned, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, we've had quite a journey here with 333 slides that we've gone through, and we're down to the last 10. So certainly I hope that the information has been helpful to you as we've gone through the process, and certainly we look forward to continuing to work with you throughout the legislative process. A couple things I want to just clarify from yesterday. We did provide a memorandum this morning to Mr. Wilson to clarify these, but I just wanted to make sure to put it on the record. We had a discussion around vacancy factors and making adjustments in the governor's recommended budget to accrue more savings. We made, or I should say I made, a comment that we were going from the standard 90 days to 120. The standard is actually 60 days. That is the actual amount that is put in place for estimate of savings for recruitment purposes and so on and so forth. So our plan is to move that to 120. So just wanted to clarify that for the record. In addition, one other piece of clarification, and Co-Chair Smith Warner, you asked the question of Sarah Drinkwater related to the Office of Student Services and what the source of other funds was for that office. We responded that it was carve out. Actually, they do get carve out for the programs they administer for grant and aid, but all of the sources of revenues are, none of those are related to the carve out. And we provided in our memorandum for you not only that office, what the sources are, but for all of the office so that you could see the sources of revenues. So just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Thank you.
And then lastly, Co-Chairman Monroe, Co-Chair Smith Warner, members of the committee, we have, I think, responded to all the questions that you've had in memorandum. We provided the last one this morning. We are working with Mr. Wilson as it relates to some analysis around Medicaid. I know we had a robust discussion around that, and we are doing some analysis that's taken us a little longer in terms of providing and getting some. We want to give you the best information. So that's really our last piece of information to provide to you. So with that, I will continue with, as mentioned on slide 292, as we get into our performance measures and want to drive you up.
Click this.
Okay.
So just a button.
Yeah. There you go. So just to provide, these are the key performance related to just the operations side. We did have a chance to walk through with you a few weeks ago on all the grant and aid performance measures. Specifically related to KPM number 9, this is the measure that we use to look at our staff and evaluate our staff and the quality of performance that they have. These are all based on our annual performance measures. We are in the process and have implemented a new system related to it, but we think it's important that we are measuring the quality of our staff, the success that they're performing at. And based on this measure, we try to achieve a 90% target of excellent, good to excellent performance. And at this point, we're around 91% based on all of our performance evaluations.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Sorry, I can't let this go by. 91 is more than double 90?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, thank you for pointing out. We will make sure in the future our graphs are start at zero and that it shows a much smaller amount.
Just a more accurate scale.
Yes, ma'am.
Argue.
So the next performance measure is related to customer service, which is pretty standard for all the state agencies. This is something that we, again, take very seriously. We are in the process right now of doing our 2017 measurement. So what you're looking at is, with the most recent information, 2016. Pleased to show here that, you know, we've made good progress over the years. We've seen constant trend-wise of in all areas of accuracy, timeliness, availability of information, expertise. So we're very pleased with the trends. You can see we did have a little blip that is on the black where we had a pretty high return, and then we saw the next year, the most recent survey, go down slightly. It's still up above what the averages have been, but we're going to be obviously looking very closely here in the next survey to see if that was just an anomaly or if there is some form of trend that we need to analyze. I will say that, you know, the areas that probably show the lowest return for us is in the area of timeliness. This, again, is something that we want to strive for with our external partners and being able to provide information as quickly as possible. And while we're still below where we are targeting, we are, again, trending in the right direction related to timeliness.
Can I ask you two questions about that? Number one, do you have a goal for in each of those categories?
Yeah, the target that we have set or has been approved by this body is 75%. All across the board.
Okay. And then is there discussion about upping the target on the ones where you've gotten to that, or are you going to try to keep it until you get them all there and before you move the overall targets up?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, we do still have it set at 75%, but certainly we're open to working with LFO staff to see if we can make a proposal for a higher rate of return.
And then last comment, just to clarify, my reading of that is, even though the number is 2016, it's the year before survey. Is that correct?
Co-Chair, okay. That's correct.
Great. Thank you.
The last performance measure is actually, it's two-part. We had a key performance 10. We had the first was related to all of our external partners. The next is specific to our internal partners. And this was a performance measure from our previous administration. Under Salam's leadership, he's been working to do different forms of customer satisfaction, internal surveys. He's very engaged with our labor management committee. And so he's choosing to propose a elimination of this particular measure. Not that we won't continue to monitor it, but there are different tools within the agency that we feel are more appropriate in terms of managing that and reviewing that on an ongoing basis. But again, you can see based on the most current record, we are within the target areas that we had established at 75%, excuse me. So with that, Madam Chair, those are the three performance measures specific to operations. And with your approval, I'll move into the next piece, which is the 15% reductions. This, again, is a requirement that has been set into our presentations to model what 15% reductions would look like. Again, I will point out that this is specific to the K-12 area. The Early Learning Division, as well as the Youth Development Division, gave you presentations on where their 15% reductions would be applied. So this is just specific to the K-12 area. Obviously, with a reduction of this magnitude, we're 15% of nearly a $10 billion budget is approximately $1.3 billion that we would have to look at to achieve a 15%. The majority of that clearly would have to come out of the largest share of our budget, which is the state school fund. But when we look at reductions, we do everything we can to preserve the state school fund, but more importantly, to be able to look at the special education and be able to preserve our maintenance of effort. Because as we've talked about, we don't want to do a reduction that will end up not only in state dollars lost, but federal dollars as well. The one thing I can tell you in our modeling is the Department of Administrative Services had us go through a 12% exercise, and we did model our maintenance effort to see what it would mean for a 12% reduction to the state school fund, and we were just making it in terms of maintenance effort. We haven't done that model on the 15%, but certainly can do that. But because of the results I saw with the 12%, I would venture to say that we could be in a situation where we would impact federal dollars at a 15% level. Again, the majority of these cuts, and I won't go through all of these specifically, but the majority of the dollars would come from the state school fund. From a prioritization standpoint, again, you will not see any cuts to special education in grant and aid. You will see all of the other programs at a level 15% cut is what was proposed, as well as a operational cut of nearly $6.4 million. We have provided the impacts for you so that you could evaluate and look at what each of those areas would mean should there be any action as relates to reducing those programs. So with that, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, I'll move to the final piece, which is just a real recap for you for the key legislative bill proposals. And really, I'm just going to highlight a few here, and certainly if you have specific questions, you all are very familiar with Cindy Hunt, who I know is here in the audience and certainly can have conversations with you, or if you needed further clarifications on some specifics related to that, she would be happy to give you information. But I will just highlight for you, Senate Bill 13 is consistent with one of the policy option packages that you reviewed in this presentation, the tribal curriculum development. It's a $2 million package in this budget. This is the policy component that goes with that particular proposal in the governor's budget, so I will point that out just in, as it relates to potential fiscal impact. Do you want to also point out Senate Bill 182, which is the establishment of the Educator Advancement Council? You have heard us talk about the network network of quality teaching and learning as a carve out within the state school fund. That would continue, but the way it would work is that carve out would be dedicated with this specific council, and there would be potentially different ways in which the dollars were distributed. So that particular bill is one that it should be closely looked at and evaluated, and will probably find its way to this committee at some point. Senate Bill 183 is the establishment of the Graduation Equity Fund. This is a proposal of $20 million of a carve-out from the state school fund that would be used specifically focused on improving graduation rates with a variety of different strategies, such as dealing with chronic absenteeism, looking at other best practices that could be put in place to help us. So that's just a summary, a high level of some of the key bills that we're monitoring. And again, like I said, if you choose to have any further, if you would like to have any further information, Cindy is certainly available to you. But I would imagine if these move forward, we will probably be having that conversation here at in front of you at some point. So with that, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, that concludes the 333-page presentation that we have all spent the last 4 weeks going through. I'm not as eloquent as Dr. Knorr in terms of my remarks, but let me just say for the record, it's been a pleasure to be here in front of you and to present our budget. I hope you found it informational. We tried to give you as much detail without overflowing you too much. Certainly, again, are very happy to continue to help you. I know you have very tough decisions in front of you, and we stand ready to support and help you in any way we can. So with that, I will conclude my presentation.
Thank you very much. Any questions, or are we ready to move on to DAS? Sure. Representative Wisnack.
Just a comment. My military background includes intelligence. Any intelligence from Dr. Knorr about them? No.
No.
No comment.
No comment.
Okay. All right. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Pearson.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will provide a brief summary of the 3 weeks you just passed through. The slide that you see before you, by the way, this is on the February 28th meeting date, identifies the governor's priorities, but really I can summarize it by saying kids and jobs, but kids with an exclamation point. And as we went through the budget, you'll see that the early childhood current service level was protected, as was the K-12 current service level. And also on the Department of Human Services side, when decisions were being made, there were discussions about foster parent rates, additional staff for child protective services, and family supports. So really, a lot of the discussion was about the early childhood education and K-12 system, but also taking care of those kids over in DHS. And then the other issue was equity, which I'll touch on in a moment. The highlights of the governor's budget include the $20 million carve-out that's proposed through Senate Bill 183 for improving graduation. It's been sent to you from the Policy Committee as of the 15th, so it is in Ways and Means at this point. There are basically three major components to it. The first is the Early Indicator and Intervention System. The second is Trauma-Informed Practices. And then the third is Chronic Absenteeism and Equity. And if that comes to you, there will be an opportunity to talk about how those components might be funded and whether, you know, there should be a different mix. Early learning at current service level, as I said, Measure 98 is funded at $141.5 million. That's $139.5 million directly out to schools and ESDs. And $2 million for administration in the operations program. That's in addition to the current service level for the state school fund. There was some consideration of funding it fully and then having to take a reduction to the current service level in the state school fund, but it was determined that this would probably be the best mix for this first biennium of the Measure 98 program. Theoretically, it would fund $400 for 2 years versus the $800 that was identified in the measure, or it could be $800 in the second year. There was some discussion about how quickly could you ramp up the new Measure 98 funding and expenditures. So then the next thing is, as was mentioned previously, the $10 million approximately for the School for the Deaf. And the remainder is for more environmental kinds of issues in schools with their facilities. The programs that were adopted in the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget, specifically the African American Achievement Plan and then also the Tribal Attendance Project, are fully protected at current service level. Those were not touched. And then additionally, as you've heard, there's an investment in tribal curriculum which relates to equity. This slide shows the total funds budget going back to 2007-09. It shows the expenditures and the revenues. The main thing to note here, obviously, is that during the recessionary period, there just wasn't much money going around, but the federal government did step in and provided some American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds that went away as of the end of the 11-13 biennium. The other thing to note is that the state school fund is really the major component of this. And previously there was some testimony about maybe the causes for why the growth rate for students hasn't been particularly high over the past 10 years. The fact of the matter is that Oregon did not lose its population during the most recent recession. It did in the early 80s, but did not more recently. And so this really would be confined to the school age population. And I'm not exactly sure why, but one thing could be that the early 2000s recession may have had people postponing childbearing. The next slide, slide four, shows the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget versus the proposed budget from the governor. The direct expenditures are those programs such as operations, the School for the Deaf, the Youth Corrections Program, and debt service that are basically in-house and don't pass through to other entities, specifically local school districts and ESDs. And as you can see, the majority of this agency's funding is going to go out to other entities. It's not an agency that is really a direct service kind of agency like you might see with some of your natural resource agencies, for example. So this slide, slide five, dives down into those direct expenditures and transfers to other state agencies. And as you can see, the debt-related costs and the operations increase, and that really has to do with the School for the Deaf bonding and also the OSCIM program for the facilities. But I think the more interesting slide, potentially, is a dive into grant and aid. And there's been some discussion about, well, you know, CTE, STEM, and Measure 98, what was in the governor's budget and what was the considerations? And basically summarizing the reductions, Mr. Krager mentioned that there was a $15.7 million reduction to this kind of programming. One of the elements that was considered and really sort of built into the governor's thinking on this was that the Career Pathway Fund and the summer school or the summer program could be funded by Measure 98. So in reality, those programs weren't necessarily targeted to be cut, so to speak, but potentially funded in a different manner than having their own distinct, as existing now in current service level, appropriation. The other programs that were, in fact, eliminated include the mentoring program, the FIRST program, and the course equivalent program. So those are definitely in the governor's budget, not continued into the future. And just real quickly, not a policy decision, but just part of the current service level normal practice, there were two things in the current biennium budget that were one time, and those phased out, and those were the World of Speed and Burnt River. But again, that wasn't a policy decision. It was just a normal change due to the one-time nature of the funding. This slide summarizes the state school fund over time. The thing to note here is that on the current service level and the governor's budget on the far right side of the slide, they are the same overall amount in terms of $8 billion, $15 million for the state school fund. It's just that the mix of the funding changes, and for the first time, marijuana tax revenue comes into play. That's the red element of that bar chart, and that's $74.4 million. The marijuana tax had been going to state lands, going to the corpus of the Common School Fund, and this would propose to bring that directly into the state school fund. And then there was also a little bit of a readjustment based on more recent revenue information on marijuana tax revenues that was built into the $74.4 million number. As I've mentioned before in slide 8, special payments, that pass-through is the 98% of the budget, and the remaining 2% is all of your other expenditures, personal services, S&S, and debt and service. There was a small amount of capital outlay, but it's so tiny in this budget that it wouldn't even register, so you see the footnote there. Slide 9 shows the governor's investments, including Package 114, Measure 98, Packages 108 and 109, which is the bond proceeds, early learning professional development, Package 201, and that addresses some of the cultural issues as well as some just standard development for professionals in early learning. Early learning, Package 203 is the there's some positions that were on Race to the Top federal funds that are now essentially spent completely. And so in order to continue those positions, this shifts them onto general fund. And then there's some additional positions in order to continue the early learning division and improve its performance. Child care regulations, you've heard that the 2014 Federal Act requires a different and more intensive background check process, for example. And so the Package 202 implements that. Tribal curriculum, Package 113, you've heard about that. And then finally, Packages 070, 106, and 111 are essentially fixes to some things that didn't get addressed previously, or in Package 111, it's aligning the agency's resources more specifically in terms of staff to how they actually are functioning. And so this is a perennial, actually biennial, package that occurs practically every biennium. So that brings us to slide 10 and the final slide of my presentation. And this includes the reductions, Package 090. There was a revenue shortfall package, which is really truing up the tobacco master settlement agreement funding from the June 2016 forecast, very minor. And then updates to the DAS price list and the state government services charges. That DAS and other central state agencies are allowed to ask for anything they desire in their agency request budgets, just like everybody else. And then reality hits, actually partial reality hits in the governor's budget, and then reality really hits when the legislature decides what it wants to do with the DAS budget and other central government agency budgets. So there was a reduction at this point. It will be, I'm sure, reduced further come May and June. But the statewide adjustments basically take that into account. Returning to the reductions from current service level, Package 090, the SMART and Reach Out to Read programs were eliminated. The post-secondary accelerated credits are reduced. We went through STEM and CTE. These affect regional networks, revitalization grants, innovation grants, and mentoring, student leadership, and I mentioned the first and course equivalent programs as well. The nutritional programs were slightly reduced. There was a reduction to the farm-to-school program, and then there was an increase in the amount of general fund to the PE program. The youth development division has a reduction to its juvenile crime prevention, youth community fund, and youth and innovation funds. Debt service, this was mentioned yesterday by Mr. Krager, initially in the published budget, anticipated that there would not be a third sale that there would not be a third issuance for the May 2017 sales or election. Subsequent to the publication of the budget, the governor concluded that that was not a great idea, and so that element is no longer part of the budget, but in the published budget it remains. So that's something that is in the mix for the legislature to consider. And then operations has a reduction to the Information Technology Office, the Finance and Administration Group, and Youth Development Group. And I think that basically covers everything you heard in the last 3 weeks. If you have any questions, I can try and help answer them, or I'm sure Mr. Krager could step in as well. Thank you.
Colleagues, sure. Representative Wisman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mrs. Pearson and maybe Mr. Assistant Superintendent Krager. Two questions. First, next week we're supposed to go back home for the first time in a long period of time and have town hall meetings. And school districts are working on their budget. And they asked me as a legislator, what should they plan to budget for? Is it going to be 8? Is it going to be 7.8? Is it going to be 8.1? Can you help me?
I would. If you'd like to answer, I would argue that that's going to be our decision eventually. But if you'd like to add any comments to that.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, typically during this time of the season, we are providing estimates to all school districts as they begin to gear up for the next school year. So come the first Monday of March, we release estimates. And what we typically do is we follow what the co-chairs have recommended. That's been our past practice and our policy at this point. So estimate-wise, what we have provided to school districts in their planning at this point is a $7.8 billion, which again is in the co-chairs framework. Obviously, then the rest of it is up to you in terms of where that actually lands.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mrs. Pearson, the chart with the pie charts on school funding, I forgot what number it is, the green one, the school. In last budget, we had $7.3 billion in school funding. This one, it's showing $8.0 billion in funding. That's, you know, a little less, what, $6.5 billion, or $100 million, whatever that number is. So there's that much in added to current service level? Is that the normal? That's like 10%, I think. I figured it's almost 10% that it's going up, the current service level. Is that normal? Because I think the governor's pay raise that she gave negotiated, that was state employees. That didn't affect teachers, right?
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and Representative Wisnant, yes, the governor only has control over the state contracts. The local districts would negotiate their contracts. It really depends on the specifics of the budget from one biennium to the next as to what the roll-up is going to be between the legislatively approved budget and the current service level. The elements that, for example, in the roll-up between the 2013-15 and 15-17 biennium and then the current biennium would include such things as full day K or kindergarten. In terms of the specific components of the roll-up, we have elements for labor contract negotiations, health care, PERS, so all the compensation plan.
I don't want to take the rest of the committee, Madam Chair, but so I understand what you're saying, what the roll-up. My question was, is that average? Because we also understand we've got almost $100 million, is that correct, for marijuana that should be, you know, the budget should have gone higher.
72.
Close to 100.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and Representative Wisnett, again, I think it depends from biennium to biennium. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, and maybe Mr. Wilson can help me, what the roll-up was between the 13-15 biennium and the 15-17 biennium. I think this one was smaller, actually, overall.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, I would not like to answer unless I went back and looked at the numbers, but we used the same methodology with different assumptions based on the data between every year or
correct.
Every biennium.
Madam Co-Chair, just my point is, you know, we have a normal roll-up. We understand that. That's a lot of money. But I thought the marijuana was going to help us get more money, but it doesn't seem that it's really affected. If we keep rolling up the current service level, then we're not getting any more money from marijuana is my point. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Roblin?
Thank you. And the budget we were just looking at is the one proposed by the governor, right? It's not the actual money we've received or anything else. It's basically what the governor has decided she wants to spend. And so when we're looking at that chart, it's just her way of putting money towards the budget. We have another one that we could look at that is the framework that the other people put out. Neither of them necessarily have to do with the amount of money that's coming in or going out. They're just deciding of money coming in and out, this is how they were going to spend it. Isn't that correct?
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and Senator Roblin, yes. And, of course, the May forecast will be the one that the legislature actually budgets to, which will be a good 6 months after what the governor actually used.
Yeah. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To Representative Wisnett, Co-Chair and I met with the big co-chairs a few days ago, asked exactly the question. Schools are budgeting now. What should we tell them? And after some discussion, Senator Devlin, anyway, indicated that probably 8 is a safe number.
Thank you. That's what I've been telling. And I did. Thank you, Mr. Madam Co-Chair, to respond.
Just sticking on our chair.
I'm concerned that some are saying they're budgeting at 8.4, and that's one that always worries me.
That would not be wise at this point.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin?
So I just want to make sure that I am clear on that. So 8 would be the total budget. Would that include fully funding ballot measure 92? Because in their proposal.
Do you mean 98?
98, I'm sorry.
No.
In their proposal, they did fund 98 because it was a state requirement because of the new deal, in my opinion. So do we take $300 million out of that, go back to say for general education they're going to fund it this, but the total amount for education has come off this? Those are important questions with regard to how that money
footnotes.
Is
footnotes.
I do not believe there's been a final determination of that.
That's
but
right.
What we were asking about was, do we have a sense of the state school fund number only?
But that, since you don't have a final,
yes.
We don't know if part of that $8 billion is for that or not. So with
That's
respect
right.
to what I just Good going point. Back to your question, what I tell my people is, understand we're in the conversation of figuring out what those things are, and so I would recommend you go back to the 8.7, because if they do fully fund that, that's $300 million. That puts
7.
It
better.
Or 8.7.
No,
7.8. Thank you. 7.8, because if we do start funding 92, then we've got a couple hundred thousand to realize that could go there. So I agree with the 8 billion, but how it's spent may make it different for
good point.
Great. And Senator Monroe?
And just following up, how it's spent will partly be determined by this subcommittee.
That's right.
You know, whether or not we take out of that $8 billion and fully fund Measure 98 at the 300 level, or at the level suggested, or about half of that.
Right.
It certainly will have funding, but,
right.
But you know, whether we go all the way to 300 or not is going to be something that this subcommittee is going to have some discussion over.
Right. Thank you for that.
Okay, so that's
Jake, those
goodness
comments.
Knows that conversation will continue long after today, but I think we're ready to dismiss you two. Thank you so much for your time and your testimony.
Over
and with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearings on Senate Bill 5516 and Senate Bill 5517. And
dismissing Wilson.
I am dismissing Wilson. I am.
Yeah.
Okay, and with that, shall we open one at a time?
Yes. Please.
Starting with 5030.
Let's,
or
yes,
what do you have on
5030,
top?
Yes.
Okay, Kim. Okay, I'm now going to open a work session on House Bill 5030, which is in regards to the Board of Pharmacy. I'd like to point out, colleagues, that we have been asked by the big co-chairs to start moving a few of the small health licensing boards who are completely other funded. They are all self-funded by their fee structure. So to that end, those are the three bills you see before you today. Two are funding, and one is one that we've gotten from the policy committee about a merging of a couple boards that we also heard about in here. And Kim is here from LRO to talk us through the first one.
Okay, I'm Co-Chair Smith-Warner and Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. So what you have before you is House Bill 5030, which is the budget appropriation bill for the Board of Pharmacy. You'll have on OLIS my recommendations and the supporting worksheets for it, as well as the agency's KPM measures and an amendment for the bill. And I'll just walk you through what the recommendations are. The 2017-19 LFO recommended budget for the Board of Pharmacy is 20 positions, 20 FTEs, and $7,596,546 other funds. This is a 7.6% increase from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget. With this budget, the agency's ending balance is projected to be about $1.8 million, which is approximately 5.74 months of operation. And attached, you'll see my recommendations. The heading up for it is Work Session Presentation Report dated 3/15. Note that in these adjustments to current service levels, we are not making any statewide adjustments to state government service charges and attorney general charges. We are going to include those budget items in an omnibus bill at the end of session because, as you know, state government service charges are the charges for general central services of agencies like the Secretary of State, the State Treasurer, and as well as DAS enterprise services for IT and procurement and risk management. And we will do those line items after those budgets are passed in an omnibus bill. So you won't see those.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Wisnett.
Clarification, Kim. So the pharmacy AG charges will be combined with all the other ones, or there'll be a separate bill for pharmacy for AG service charges?
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett. They will be separate. They will have a separate line item
pharmacy
in the omnibus bill. Yes.
AG, okay, services.
Yes, each agency will have a separate
Thank you.
Line item. Okay. Senator Roblin.
So when we put this budget together, do we do like we do in education, where we tell them to spend part of it in the first year a little smaller than the second year so that they can add the growth costs from year to year? Or do we just say, here's your budget for the 2 years and figure it out amongst yourselves?
Co-Chair Senator Roblin, again, this is another funded budget.
I know.
So we don't have the general fund issue. So they do have just their budget appropriation, but then we do track it with the spending
okay.
throughout the year.
Okay.
So the answer might be we
with
do
allotments.
Not give them direction on that front,
yeah,
it sounds
I mean,
like?
I mean, I think they probably
the
do
that,
but I just want to make sure. When it's general fund, we tell them basically
right.
how much you have each time. But
right.
in these other funded budgets, I don't like them to get out over their skis, and then all of a sudden they've spent half of what they were going to spend at the next year. It takes more than half to get to the end. And I just make sure that they are keeping that in mind. And they have been, they've done a good job in the past, so I'm not worried about that. I just wondered if we sent anything in. So.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, there's certain things we're looking for. One is we're looking for their ending balance and how many months that would allow them to operate. And the rule of thumb is we usually want at least 4 months.
Okay.
And sometimes it goes almost up to a year. So we look at that. We look at whether or not the revenue that they're getting in from their fees are going to sustain over time. We look at whether or not they have enough staff to do the investigations that they need to do to keep up with any complaints or any issues that come before them. And basically then we set their budget, which includes how many staff they have, how many FTE, knowing that that can be paid for and funded and that they'll have an ending balance that's sufficient. If not, then we bring the administration in and we talk to them and we ask them, you know, are you going to need additional staff? Are you getting behind in your workload? Those are the kinds of questions we ask on every one of these self-funding boards, and you're going to see several of them now in the next couple of weeks.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So these are the following adjustments to the budget. First, the budget includes a carryover of $351,989. This is to complete the implementation of the agency's licensing and compliance database upgrade. And then it also includes $69,260 establish a partnership with Pacific University School of Pharmacy to offer a one-year fellowship designed to transition fellow from a general practitioner to a regulatory pharmaceutical specialist and clinical educator. This will help build the healthcare workforce and succession planning for the state. And it also, the budget also include an increase in $11,819 to cover the per diem for new board members and to increase the daily per diem from $30 to $100 to allow for a diversity of board members who may not be employer supported. And those are the changes to the current service level for the budget.
And as I recall, I believe that was part of the trying to bring in more pharmacy techs on the board as well, who might not be.
Okay. Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation to House Bill 5030.
Okay. Senator Monroe moves the LFO recommendation to House Bill 5030.
Okay. And now the next item for you for this budget, for your deliberation, is the agency key performance measure. It's also on OLIS. And you will see that LFO recommends that the agency reports. The only change I've made is for KPM number 2, the percent of audited pharmacists who complete continuing education on time. I recommend that the agency reports information only for odd number years, because this is actually when the pharmacists renew their license and are audited. So on even number years, they're going to have zero. They won't meet their target, and on, so it would be a very useful number to capture. And for the remaining KPMs, LFO recommends approval of the KPM and targets as presented.
Okay.
And Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on the key performance measures for House Bill 5030.
Okay. Senator Monroe moves the LFO recommendation on the key performance measures on House Bill 5030.
And there are no budget notes for the Board of Pharmacy. And you do have a dash one amendment for the appropriation bill. And the only thing it does is remove the placement holder number and insert the actual budget, which is $7,596,546.
Yes, Senator
Monroe? Madam Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the dash one amendment to House Bill 5030.
Senator Monroe moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 5030.
Okay, and now we just need your final action.
You don't have to vote on any of the amendments or any of the other motions.
We just.
Final?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Final motion. I move House Bill 5030 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Monroe moves House Bill 5030 as amendment to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay. So,
carrier.
Oh, I have to, do I move it now or do the carriers? So moved.
Carriers to the full, the House, and the Senate.
Oh, goodness. All right. We need a carrier to the full, the House, and the Senate. Now, to the full, it has to be a member of the full. So, Senator Monroe?
Why don't you give me this first one?
Okay, great. And can you move it? Can you carry it on the Senate, as well?
And then you need somebody in the House.
Okay. Any volunteers? Oh, Representative Hernandez, I believe, is volunteering. How fortunate. Yeah, I was going to say it was supposed to be last one on the nose, but it was first one instead. Representative Hernandez, please. Okay. So with that, we close the work session as well.
Yes,
I close the work session on House Bill 5030, and we're moving to 2319.
Yes.
Great. We will now open a work session on House Bill 2319.
Okay, co-chairs, member of the committee, House Bill 2319 relating to mental health agencies is the bill to merge the administration and centralized service of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists with the State Board of Psychologist Examiners to form the Oregon Mental Health Regulatory Agency. The boards will continue to maintain their separate authority over consumer protection and determining the qualifications of their respective regulated professions. The two boards will jointly appoint a director for the Oregon Health, the Oregon Mental Health Regulatory Agency. The measure previously had hearings in the House Committee on Healthcare on February 15th and again on March 8th. The original staff measure summary, the fiscal impact statement, are available on OLIS. And the fiscal impact of the bill, passage of this bill is anticipated to realize efficiencies and savings for the two board, and the budgetary impact of the bill is addressed in SB 5513, the budget appropriation bill for the Oregon Mental Health Regulatory Agency that you're about to work next after this one.
Okay.
Question?
Senator Monroe.
I would move House Bill 2319 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe moves House Bill 2319 to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Parrish.
So I'm not sure if folks in who's the licensees who are would be affected by this either understand the bill or I'm not reading the bill the right way, but it seems that there's a lot of email chatter in my inbox this morning about this bill with concerns from people in who would be licensed under this new board. I'd like to be able, before I give this a yes vote, to better understand what their concerns are.
Okay.
And also reach out to some of the members of the House Healthcare Committee who sent this down to us unanimously, which is why Representative Kinnemer pulled me out, but I'd like to talk to some of the other members. Right now I'm going to be a no.
Okay.
Until I better understand why there are people who are filling my inbox with emails this morning.
That's valid.
And then reserve my right to change that to yes later on the floor.
Okay.
But I feel like if there is some question out there in the minds of citizens who would be licensed under this, then it's we have an obligation to find out what their concerns are and either alleviate them or come back with some additional language and an amendment that solves those concerns.
Great.
So,
I know I had some contact from some folks last night who then checked back with me this morning and said that their concerns had been resolved. So I'm comfortable with it, but I understand that is acknowledged. Any other discussion?
Same thing. Heard from some folks. And then they came back and said, no, we're okay.
Okay, great. Representative Wisnett?
I'll be a yes, but may change my based upon what happens.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Do we want to go ahead and do a roll call then?
Yes.
Okay. We'll do a roll call vote then, just to be sure.
Senator
Monroe. Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Excused for Senate business? I know he's testifying.
Yeah, he's testifying.
I don't know if that's an answer in committee as it is on the floor.
Aye.
He's testifying
absent.
Also.
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Wisnett?
Yes, for the right to change on the floor. Thank you.
Always that right.
Representative X.
Yes. Okay. With that, The bill passes. Not the bill passes. Yes, the motion passes. House Bill 2319.
Carriers.
We need carriers again. Senator Roblin,
I'm fine.
Would you like to take a turn? Thank you so much. Would either of you, Representative Wisnant and Parrish, would either of you be comfortable doing this, or shall I assign it to Representative Lively just
sure.
in case
He's
there's...
Not
okay,
here.
Let's assign it to Representative Lively. Just to spread it around.
Well, that's
exactly.
what he gets for not being
yes.
here.
Senator Roblin again? Or?
Yes, Senator Roblin again. Great. I close the work session on House Bill 2319 and open our final work session on Senate Bill 5513.
Okay. Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 5513 is the budget appropriation bill for the Oregon Mental Health Regulatory Agency. The budget recommendation and work papers, as well as the agency, the two boards, KPMs, are on OLIS. The 2017-19 LFO recommended budget for the Oregon Mental Health Regulatory Agency is 11 positions, 11 FTE, and $3,514,013 other funds. This is a 19.1% increase from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget. The attached recommendations for the Legislative Fiscal Office have the following changes. Again, statewide adjustments will be included in the omnibus bill. The boards, as I said, they're just going to merge administration, but the two boards will remain separate. So we're going to move their budget item. They're each going to get a budget limitation separately. So I'll start out by giving you the total summary for for both boards, but we'll go ahead and talk about each board separately. We purposely created a budget structure so that we can keep track of spending for both boards, so that one board does not end up subsidizing the other. Yep. So you'll see the following package. So let's start with the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. The 2017-19 LFO recommended budget for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists is 7 positions, 7 FTE, $2,064,008 other funds. With this budget, the agency's ending balance is a projected $446,184, which is approximately 5.19 months of operation. And the changes to this board's current service level is as follows.
Okay, just a moment, Kim. Representative Hernandez?
Are the dates on the document incorrect as far as the LFO recommendation at the very end?
316.
Sorry, I was looking at the other document. Follow-up. So.
Yes. This document?
The one you were just holding up?
This one here?
Yeah, if you look at the dates, I believe they're incorrect.
The end or?
This date?
Yes, on top.
Yeah, the last one is 15-17, should be 17-19.
Oh, yes, the dates on my memo.
On all of them.
Gotcha.
He's absolutely right.
Yes, the last one should be 17-19, the last column. It's just a typo.
It's all of them, even on the previous documents.
Okay, yeah, that's my typo. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative.
Yep.
So
that's why we're the detailed
reasonings. Yes. These are the following changes for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. The Package 101 for this board just redistributes some staffing and facilities expenditures equitably between the two boards to ensure that licensing fees of one board does not subsidize the expenses of the other. In addition, the package increases the agency's limitation by 512,350 other funds, 3 positions, and 4 FTEs. With increasing mental health awareness, both boards have seen a continuing increase in the number of applicants and licensees and the number of investigations. This package will enable the boards to handle the workload associated with this increase. And the package establishes one investigator position, one administrative specialist position, and one office assistant. It also allows the board to reclassify an investigator 3 position to an investigator 2 position, while adding lead work responsibilities to an investigator position. These staffing changes will partially be supported by an increase in the renewal fees for counselors and therapists, as well as internship licensure by $40. This increase is anticipated to raise revenue by $320,600 for the 2017-19 biennium. And the next package is an increase in limitation for $54,064 to cover the Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists share of integrating and upgrading the two boards' online database as the two boards merge.
Okay. Motion.
I'll accept a motion. Senator Monroe.
I move LFO recommendations for Senate Bill 5513.
Senator Monroe has moved the LFO recommendation for Senate Bill 5513. Any discussion? Representative Parrish.
So similar to my concern about House Bill 2319 that we just worked, this is the budget for that, so I'm going to be a no. I also have a little bit of concern kind of reading through the materials that we are, if the goal is to merge and create efficiencies, that we actually are growing the size of the FTE. I would have hoped that we would, if we're going to talk about merging boards, that we would gain efficiencies out of that. So I'd like to see that actually pan out, but suddenly we're going from a current service level of 8 to a current service level of 11. I get these are other funds, but I still am interested in trying to understand how merging two boards results in 3 new FTE for efficiency. I get new investigators or whatever. I also think this is a class of workers, particularly on the counselor and therapist side, that we don't pay them a lot, and so increasing their license fees it concerns me. So I'm going to be a no and reserve my right to change that with better information. But
okay. And do you have any
to address that? Okay, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'll address why the need for 3 more FTEs. Unfortunately, the merger came at the same time as another situation that doesn't have any impact. Isn't related to the merger at all. But as if you look at the budget, at the licensee numbers for both boards for the last 10 years, every single category of licensee has been increasing between 12% and 15% within the average of 12 and 15%.
Each biennium.
Each year, actually, within the last 10 years. And so the numbers of licensees have increased by that much. And so the board is now overseeing a lot more licensees. And as a result of those increase in licensees, their investigation numbers have increased. I believe the number was 33% from 2011 to 5 years later in 2016. So when we looked at that, we realized that they really are, the workload has been, without additional staff, it would be unsustainable and inefficient and they wouldn't be as responsive to their licensees.
And you also said that the boards are going to continue to function separately but be housed under the same agency. Could you talk about that?
Correct. Co-chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee. So they will function, their budget will be kept separate, as we said, so we know that they aren't subsidizing each other. But the efficiencies will come in that they will share office staff. So they will share investigators. And the investigators are being cross-trained. So that's where the efficiency is coming in, because instead of both boards getting 3 or 4 investigators, they're now sharing maybe 5 investigators. So that, that's where the efficiency comes in.
Okay. Great. Yes.
Do
go
we
ahead.
Have, and maybe this came out in the policy world, in the policy side around 2319, but do we have, I get that there's more volume of people going into this. Obviously, the Affordable Care Act has put a lot more dollars into mental health. We have more people going into these fields. But the number of investigations seems, if you said there's a 33% growth in investigations, that number seems high to me. Was it addressed in the policy side at all about why they're seeing an increase of investigations or claims against counselors?
Co-chairs for Parrish. I don't know about the policy side. I don't think they discussed that. But I think during the public hearing here, the executive director did to discuss that they're seeing an increase just because of for several related factors. One is that the public is just more aware of mental illness issues and services, and then they have more practitioners, and their clients are more aware of you know what kind of complaints they can file, so that there it's both the volume of increasing licensees and just awareness.
Okay. So do we have to vote?
And
on
I
that?
Think we just moved that.
Right.
And now, so now I will move on to KPMs. Because the two boards are merging, what I'm recommending, what the LFO is recommending, is that we approve the KPMs and targets as presented. However, LFO recommends that the Board of Licensed Counselor and Therapists spend the interim working with the Board of Psychologists Examiners, DAS, and LFO to improve and align the two boards' KPMs once the Mental Health Regulatory Agency is fully merged.
Okay.
And then come back to you next session with a more improved KPMs. Set of KPMs.
Great. Senator Monroe?
Move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Senator Monroe has moved the LFO recommendation on key performance measures. Any discussion? Okay.
Okay, and there are no budget notes for the Board of Licensed Counselor and Therapists. And now we'll move on to the line item for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. The 2017-19 LFO recommended budget for the State Board of Psychologist Examiners is 4 positions, 4 FTE, and $1,450,005 other funds. With this budget, the board's ending balance is projected to be $228,095, which is approximately 3.78 months of operation. And the recommendation for the board contains the following adjustments. Package 100, which is the companion to House Bill 2319, it literally just technically takes the budget structure of the Board of Psychologists Examiners and move it into the Board of Licensed Counselors and Therapists, so there's no dollar amount to that except that the dollar amount of the budget of the board. And it also includes an increase of half an FTE for the Board of Psychologists Examiners, reflecting that companion package that we talked about before that just redistributes the staffing equitably between the two boards. And then it increased other fund $49,664 to cover the Board of Psychologists Examiners' share of the integrating and upgrading the two boards' online database. It increases the other funds limitation by $103,022 to cover administrative hearing costs for the board's psychologist examiners. It increased other funds limitation by $38,604 to cover the attorney general fees, additional attorney general fees for the board of psychologist examiners. And we will make that adjustment in the omnibus bill if the rate either goes up or down. And then package 105 increases the other funds limitation by $14,351 to cover background checks for the Board of Psychologists Examiners.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Move the LFO recommendation for Senate Bill 5513.
Okay. Senator Monroe has moved the LFO recommendation for Senate Bill 5513. Any discussion on this? Okay.
Okay, the KPMs for the Board of Psychologists Examiners is going to be similar to the Board of Counselors and Therapists. LFO recommends approval of the KPMs and targets as presented. However, LFO recommends that the Board of Psychologists Examiners spend the interim working with the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, DAS, and LFO to improve and align the two boards' KPMs once the Mental Health Regulatory Agency is fully merged.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures for 5513.
Senator Monroe has moved the LFO recommendations on key performance measures for Senate Bill 5513. Any discussion? Okay.
Okay, and you do have an amendment. Again, it's just deleting the placeholder number for the budget and inserting the correct number for both the boards. For the Board of License Counselors and Therapists, the budget amount is $2,064,008. And for the Board of Psychologist Examiners, the budget is $1,450,005.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
Move adoption of the Dash One Amendment to Senate Bill 5513.
Senator Monroe has moved adoption of the Dash One Amendment to Senate Bill 5513. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay. That amendment is moved.
And Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 5513 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved Senate Bill 5513 as amendment to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Do we need to call roll or is that sufficient? Okay. With Senator Parrott. Look at that.
Hey,
I gave you a demotion. With Representative Parrish as a no, the motion carries.
Sure.
I need three carriers.
It's a Senate bill, so we'll let Senator Thompson carry it to full Ways and Means and to the Senate floor.
Sounds good.
I figured being as I was gone, I got stuck carrying the first two.
No, I got one of those.
Okay.
No, you got one. I got the other one.
And
we defend the
if there's
two.
No other volunteers, I'd be happy to take this one.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Okay, and with that, I will. Oh, yes. Senator Thompson.
Permission to vote on 53-23-19. I was testifying.
You were testifying. We noted that you were on Senate business. Senator Roblin?
I make a motion to suspend the rules to allow for the vote of Senator Thompson.
Senator Roblin has moved that we suspend the rules and allow a recording of the vote of Senator Thompson on our two earlier bills. Any discussion? Okay, so moved. Senator Thompson, on House Bill 5030, do I need to reopen them?
No, just...
Okay, on House Bill 5030, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vote. Senator Thompson votes aye on House Bill 5030. Senator Thompson, on House Bill 2319, how do you vote?
Aye.
Senator Thompson votes aye.
Thanks.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Senator Thompson.
Business. Good for the business.
Can I... did I close 5513 yet? Okay.
Yep.
Let me go ahead and close that the work session on Senate Bill 5513 and recognize Representative Wisnett.
For good of the business, good of the order.
Good of the order. I'll take good of the order.
Kim, thank you, Madam Chair. As you're compiling these service charges, the agencies we went through, some of them do it as a year contract, and some do it as a case by case. Can you, as you're doing this, can you put together a report or analysis? Are they better to do that? Are we losing money? Is AG making money off of us? What's the deal there?
I would assume that is how each agency approaches it, but I'll let Kim.
Co-chair, right. So Representative Wisnett. Yes, I believe we will have that report for you. I think LFO will compile the list, and then we will.
So clarification. So if one of our agencies here, said I'll do it for the year, but they didn't come up, didn't spend half of that. But I understand in a testimony that, they're betting against the, buying insurance. I understand the concept.
Yeah, that's
there.
What it is.
Yeah, but
right. Yes.
But
and
see how much we're talking about.
Yeah.
We don't want the AG to get too rich.
Right. And my understanding, Kim, is that is part of the budgeting process each 2 years is to kind of review how each agency used their AG in the prior 2 years and try to guesstimate whether it makes more sense to continue as an on needed or to do a contract.
Yes, Co-Chair Representative Smith Warner, members of the committee, yes, our office will provide that as part of the Department of Justice budget hearings and work session.
I thought you did that.
Okay. Any other issues for the good of the order?
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Generally speaking, with these very small agencies, they're better off to do the contract because they might get one really expensive case. They could blow their budget wide open. Whereas a big agency, could probably they would probably balance out. So that's my understanding of it in the past anyway.
In my previous service, thank you, Madam Chair. In my previous assignment on public safety, they also then the AG uses that money to cover some other things like during the investigations or protection of the Cover Oregon and all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
Okay. With no further ado, I'm going to just to point out we will be
meeting tomorrow, right?
We will be meeting tomorrow, although as you'll see on the bottom of your agenda, we'll be meeting tomorrow for work sessions on two additional boards, the Board of Chiropractic Examiners and the Board of Dentistry.
Okay.
So that could be a shorter meeting, depending
hopefully
on how we all respond exactly. But with that note, I'd like to adjourn today's meeting. Thank you all.
I think it shouldn't be more than a half an hour.
Yeah.
Half an hour.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
I think it shouldn't be more than a half.